Hello, welcome. Tonight we're going to delve into the warm waters of torts. Remember last time we discussed the criminal law. We discussed the structure and purpose of the criminal law, the fact that it is broken up into substantive criminal law, that's crimes, and the level of punishment you get for those crimes, and procedural criminal law, criminal procedure, because that's how you do investigations. It's the rules on how you try cases in a criminal context, and how you will administrate punishments on that. And you have substantive criminal law, then you have procedural criminal law. And then we talked a lot about the theories of punishment, the sentencing and what the meaning is behind punishment, the five provisions, everything from the providing of punishment as a means for retribution, the means of rehabilitation, the means of trying to provide deterrence out there, and to try and see if you can have some degree of being able to compensate victims on that. And then we wrapped up with what are known as the common law felonies. Mr. and Mrs. Lamb, remember that? Murder, rape, manslaughter, robbery, sodomy. Then you have larceny, arson, and mayhem, and wrapped up with burglary. Then we finished up with our case, which is Regina v. Dudley and Stevens, that horrible scenario where the people who were bringing a yacht from England to Australia met with bad weather. The yacht went down and they were stranded out in a 13-foot lifeboat in the middle of the ocean for over almost a month without any food, without any water, and how they sadly killed and ate the cabin boy because of the fact that they were starving and claimed a defense of necessity, which is not a valid defense. The courts found them guilty of the capital crime of murder. Remember at the end, however, because of the horrible circumstances, the Queen, Regina, Queen Victoria, was the one who would commute their sentence, not pardon them, but commute their sentence after a period of 2 years. Okay, tonight we're going to jump into torts. Remember, we talked briefly about torts during our section on crimes. Most torts are crimes, and most crimes are torts, and it's tort is the civil side of that, which whereby an individual who gets harmed can seek redress through damages. We're going to talk tonight about general principles, torts versus crimes. We're going to provide definitions, and we're going to wrap up tonight with the types of torts. Then we're going to get into negligence and intentional torts. There's two types of torts. There's intentional torts, torts that you do on purpose to be able to harm that individual, and unintentional torts, which is negligence. You made a mistake. Then we're going to move on to liability and foreseeability. What are those definitions? What is liability? What is foreseeability? What about strict liability? What about defenses to torts? And lastly, we're going to do one of the most famous cases in American history, which is McPherson versus Buick Motor Car Company, which talks about how indispensable foreseeability is in the concept of torts. Because without foreseeability, you can't really have liability, because how can you prevent negligence if you can't foresee something? And that's a very big case, and we're excited to talk to you about it. Let's jump right in. First and foremost, general principles. What is a tort? How is it defined? Well, Black's Law Dictionary defines a tort as a civil wrong other than a breach of contract. Now, a breach of contract is obviously where the duties you have are not being fulfilled to that other party. But a tort doesn't come out of contract. It comes out of our social relations with each other. And it's a civil wrong for which a remedy may be obtained. If you do something wrong, you get a recover. The person who you wrong gets a recovery from you, usually in the form of damages, most often resulting in a breach of duty that the law imposes on you. With a contract, you impose those duties on each other. Both the contracting parties impose that. With a tort, those duties are imposed upon you by society. And it's a relationship between the two people. What is the purpose of the law on torts? The tort law seeks to provide reimbursement to members of society who suffer a loss because of a dangerous or unreasonable conduct of others. Torts, as we said, may be in one of two categories, either intentional or negligence. You also have something called strict liability torts. Strict liability torts are in negligence, but you're automatically liable. You don't have to meet those other standards that you do in negligence. The derivation, the word tort, comes from the word wrong in Old English. And it evolved from the ancient common law writs of trespass and trespass on the case. Under these writs, each act involved the actor or tortfeasor causing harm to a victim. And what tort law seeks to do is provide a legal remedy, as we said, usually in the form of damages, but it can be inequitable relief sometimes, whereby the person who either intentionally harmed that other person or negligently harmed them under certain circumstances has to pay damages to provide some degree of recovery and remuneration to the person who's been harmed. As we said, the essence of tort law establishes a standard of conduct for all members of society. You know, unlike contract law, whereby the duties that you have are prescribed pursuant to the contract that you enter into, this tort law is a relationship not out of contract, not of an agreement, but out of a social contract, whereby we try as a society to address antisocial behavior or misconduct or negligent, thoughtless conduct with some kind of remedy. You have intentional torts, which is intentional interference with a person's property or reputation or their actual physical person. You have negligence, which is the failure to exercise reasonable care to protect that person from harm. And then you have strict liability, as we said, which is liability without a demonstration of fault. It is negligence, but it's without that demonstration of fault. The effect of tort law is where an injured person can shift the cost of harm that they suffer to the person who harmed them. Liability and damages under a tort are determined by juries. Plaintiffs in tort cases are usually seeking monetary damages, but they can also get an equitable relief in certain circumstances. That if they do go to trial, the jury itself determines the liability and determines the amount of damages. You have a constitutional right to trial by jury, and that is fundamental to tort law. And as a result of that, that jury helps to make that decision, because this is a societal ability to correct the wrong that occurred to that person. And the jury is one of the best ways that they can do that. Torts versus crimes. As we said, there's an intersection there. Many crimes are torts. Many torts are crimes. Torts are the civil side of the behavior that often rises to the level of crimes. Not every tort's a crime, and not every crime is a tort, but they both come down to the question of societal duties. A crime is a wrong that arises out of the violation of a public duty, whereas a tort is a wrong that arises out of a violation of a private duty. Many times these duties do intersect, as we say. The distinction between a tort and a crime, a tort allows an individual person, usually the victim, to obtain a personal remedy, whereas a crime allows society to demonstrate their viewpoint that that is wrongful conduct, and then to enforce punishment. There's also differences in the burden of proof. A civil case is determined by preponderance of the evidence, which is a more likely than not standard of proof for liability, whereas guiltiness of a crime is a standard of beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a higher level to be able to meet that threshold. The conviction of a crime is much more difficult than a civil action to determine whether or not someone harmed you in a tort. And the more likely than not burden is just that. It is, you know, a 50% preponderance, whereas a reasonable doubt is a much higher threshold. And the reason you have a higher burden is because of the fact with a crime, there is frequently incarceration or possibly death that gets decided by that liability, by that guiltiness. With respect to the tort, it is only money damages, which can be substantial, but it's not the same as incarceration. Now, what are types of torts? You have two types, as we said. You have intentional torts and you have negligence. The intent standard is that you intentionally intend to do the act. You don't necessarily intend to cause the harm, but you intend to do the act. And the law recognizes that you have a conscious desire to perform the act which causes the harm. A person who doesn't have a conscious desire to actually cause the consequences, but does have the conscious desire to do the act, is still liable as a result of that. Intentional torts are things you do on purpose, and they include things like assault, battery, conversion. Conversion is the tortious side of stealing. Defamation, false imprisonment, intentional infliction of emotional distress. You intentionally hurt someone emotionally so badly that they have physical manifestations. Interference with contractual relations, malicious prosecution or trespass. All these are intentional torts. You do them on purpose to try and cause harm to the person. They're all actionable. That means you can sue over them and you can get a recovery for the harm you suffer as a result of that. Negligence, on the other hand, is not intentional. Negligence is the defined as not intentional. It's the unintentional failure to take reasonable care based on a duty to act in a way that would protect others from an unreasonable risk of harm. It's acting reasonably to protect others. When you act with such callous disregard to the harm of others, you could be found to be negligent. And the duty of being able to protect others in society, that negligence standard, were you acting unreasonably, and the standard is how would a reasonable person under the circumstances behave? And as a result of that, the jury is going to make that determination. What are the elements of negligence which will be what the jury uses to determine whether or not you acted reasonably? First, did that person have a duty? Did they have a duty to that other person to prevent that harm? was there a breach of duty? And that breach of duty comes down to, did they act with unreasonableness? Were their actions so unreasonable as to have caused that harm? The third thing is that person had to suffer harm, because the old adage, no harm, no foul. Well, if that person never suffered harm, then there's really no tort of negligence. It may have been a misbehavior, may have been a breach of duty, but at the end of the day, if there's no harm, then there's no tort. Causation. If you have a duty and a breach of duty and harm, was that breach of duty what caused that harm? Is there a connection there? And did your actions, it's the but-for test. If you did that, this happened. But for your actions, this occurred. That's the causation element. And lastly, foreseeable. If the party who conducted the activity, who had the duty, who breached the duty, who caused the harm, if that was foreseeable by a reasonable person standing in the shoes of the actor, then you have a case of negligence. You have to have all five of those elements in order to prove a case of negligence, in order to show that. Because again, this is unintentional conduct. It's not something that you did to purposely hurt them, unlike an intentional tort. So with these unintentional torts, with this negligence, you have to show those five elements: the duty, the breach of duty, the harm, the causation, and the foreseeability. Now, where are these negligence actions? What do they result in? Generally, they're for one of three categories. They can be in different ones, but these are the three big ones. Personal injury. Because of my duty to you, my breach of duty that occurred, the harm that you suffered, the causation and the foreseeability, you suffered a personal injury. I didn't shovel my sidewalk, you slipped on it and hurt yourself when you fell. That's a personal injury. You can sue me in negligence because all those elements are there and you suffered an injury. Another aspect, and this is what we're going to do our case on tonight, is something called product liability. This is where a manufacturer or a retailer has a product that they put out in the stream of commerce that, because of its defective nature, it's not what it was intended to be, it causes an injury to someone who's a consumer of that product. Product liability is a big area of negligence law. And lastly, malpractice. Malpractice is where a doctor or a lawyer or accountant or someone who has a high level of professional skill, who's got a duty to others, does not use the level of professional skill to which they have been licensed. And as a result of that, their client or their patient gets harmed. And malpractice is another big area of negligence law. That's it for our introduction on torts. Next time, we're on to a deeper dive of what constitutes the law of torts and the ability of causation and the elements that we have here to be able to prove a negligence case. See you shortly. Thanks so much.